And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, we are in between two conventions, very unconventional conventions, because people couldn't get together. At least the Democrats decided not to get together. The Republicans, as everybody recalls, left Charlotte because the mayor wouldn't let them get together. He said it was too dangerous and went to Florida. And because the Florida official said they could get together there, then the Florida official said, no, it's too dangerous. So it's not at all clear what they're going to do, how they're going to do it. But apparently Trump is going to use the White House as part of the settings for part of his convention. So in settings anyway, we got an unconventional convention. But what did you think about the Democratic convention? And what do you think the Republicans are going to do with their convention to counter it?
Well, you know, I was supposed to be in Milwaukee.
Right.
Thanks to the voters of the 8th Congressional District. And in some ways, having gone to the previous convention, you know, they're a lot of fun, and there's a liveliness to them that you don't quite get via Zoom. On the other hand, you could do certain things via Zoom. I thought the underlying theme of the Democrats was diversity. You saw that every night and in every Zoom picture. You had a lot of women, a lot of people of color and other minorities popping in and out. And there was very little droning on and on and on the convention. They kept it pretty lively. Whoever produced it, I think, did a really good job on the production values of it. I happen to think that the highlight of what I saw was the roll call of the states, you know, which that was always a big deal when you had contested conventions or what have you. But to have you just saw a lot of America, a lot of different places, and what people chose to emphasize. You know, Scranton, Bob Casey stood outside of that Green Ridge house that Joe Biden grew up in, and gave the Pennsylvania vote. I thought that was pretty nice, but in some ways it lacked a certain amount of drama. And of course, what it lacked is the networking that people do, and the camaraderie of being actually with other people and people from different places and getting to know them, and they get to know you and what have you. We'll just have to see how this, you know, how this plays out, because, you know, cost wise and what have you, going forward, if they're not going to have a convention city, really, that's a pretty big change in the way we've done things. The Republicans, I understand, Donald Trump was watching very carefully how the Democrats were staging this. For him, it's not about what they said. It's about the staging, and that they're still tweaking what they were planning to do over time. I think that they're going to, you know, they're going to just be in attack mode constantly. We've heard the attacks that Biden is a puppet, and that he's not competent, and that it's the socialist agenda, the fear mongering that they keep harping on. You know, I've seen some of the more recent polls have indicated that a couple of places, and they could be outlier polls, that Biden's lead has shrunk in places like Pennsylvania and Minnesota because Trump is up in attacks in ads in those places. I'm just interested in seeing how the Republicans try to pull this off, and usually they're able to. Everybody is kind of able to, but of course, if the convention is run like the administration's been run the last 3.5 years, then maybe it won't have such details. By the way, I did note that, you know, although the networks all covered the convention, and the statistics were down from 2016. The big fall off was on Fox from its normal primetime audience. That they had far fewer people watching. I guess the Republicans just don't want to even hear anything about the Democrats. They've already made up their mind, and God forbid they hear something that they may like or that might change their mind. So they don't even watch these things.
Of course, the statistics about the audience doesn't take into account YouTube, and right. There's enormous audience on YouTube, and that audience is mostly young people. So it's skewed. If people rely on only the network, the broadcast numbers, which are themselves guesses, and eliminate the from consideration the internet audience, you don't know what you're talking about, really.
Yeah, but of course, then you get into the problem that the younger people don't tend not to vote. Hopefully, that this would inspire them.
And then, let me ask you this: what did you think the convention revealed about the strategy of the Democratic campaign, and how do you evaluate that?
Well, the campaign, what we've seen up to now in the campaign is that if the focus is on Donald Trump and his policies and his incompetence, that seems to be the winning, or that's what's given the Democrats the lead. So they keep emphasizing Trump. Now, what they tried to do was also make a little bit more of an introduction of Joe Biden, and to blunt some of the criticism, that he couldn't talk, or he was getting senile or what have you. Even after Biden's speech, which most of the pundits thought was a very good speech, Rush Limbaugh came out the next day and said, this was really pre-taped, and they spliced it together because he really couldn't pull this off, ignoring the fact that there were actually journalists in the room watching him do this. But to the true believers, they don't really care. And I just thought that their main theme was diversity and unity, that this is the new America. The way that they had hostesses for the four nights and things like that. That's where I thought that's what hit me about the convention.
So do you think that strategy will win? Is that the winning strategy?
Well, we're going to find out in November or December or whenever.
Well, I understand that, but looking forward, what do you think?
Well, it was not a winning strategy in 2016. People criticized Hillary Clinton for saying that she was basically running, saying Donald Trump's an awful person and you got to elect me. But this is a different election for two reasons. Number one is Hillary was also highly disliked. Biden is not Hillary for a couple of reasons that we could get into. The other thing is that in 2016, they were both, Trump was the insurgent candidate. He wasn't the sitting president. And now he is. And now people have had a better chance to know him and to evaluate him and to evaluate his policies and whether they like or they dislike what he's done or what he's been doing. Trump keeps harping on this law and order campaign and disorder, and that if you elect him, suburbs won't be safe and the nation won't be safe. It'll be chaos. But of course, the irony is that this is under Trump that all this is happening. What has he done about it? What is he going to do about it? And he keeps talking about, well, these are in Democratic cities, and that it's the Democrats who don't know how to run things. And to his people, that has certain value. I mean, we keep hearing from people who are living in the cities that they're not a lot of people aren't real happy that they're fleeing the cities, or they're at least moving out temporarily. That they don't find living in places like Portland or Philadelphia or New York City to be what it was just a few months ago.
So, in other words, Trump is right. Trump's approach is working?
Well, whether it's still going to translate into votes is another story, because a lot of these people are still Democrats. and they see other issues with regard to Donald Trump. They may be moving out, but they're not racists. They're not into that mold. And they do value education, and they do value knowledge. So that's what we have to see. And, of course, what we learned this week is that, further evidence that Trump was really a tool of the Russian disinformation machinery, of Vladimir Putin, with the report that came out from the Senate Intelligence Committee that we all the Mueller report kind of talked about, but the Intelligence Committee report, and this I think was the fifth volume of it, was even more striking in what it said. It basically said that there was collusion. By any other name, it's still collusion. And there was a little known part of it that they actually made, the committee made referrals to the Justice Department for criminal cases to be opened against Jared Kushner, I think Donald Jr., against Steve Bannon, Roger Stone, for perjury, I guess you would call it, for lying to the committee about what they knew or who they contacted or what they were doing. And, of course, this week we saw what happened with Steve Bannon. But that wasn't because of the Intelligence Committee. That was just because of another set of grifting fraud.
It's just because he's a common crook.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually, he got arrested because he and his partner ran this organization that suckered people to giving money so that they could build the wall that the Democrats in the Congress weren't funding. And they raised $25 million, and they stated that they weren't going to take any money out of it, that this was literally a pro bono type of enterprise. And it turns out that they had, according to the U.S. Attorney's Office, that they had siphoned off through a complex scheme at least $1 million into their own pocket.
Bannon got at least $1 million. The other guy got even more, according to the indictment.
Well, we're gonna see about this.
But this is interesting to me because the indictment was brought by the Southern District Attorney in New York. That's Trump's appointee. What's going on there?
Well, don't forget that this was the office that Bill Barr tried to break up.
That's right.
And
he got rid of the guy running it and put in his place somebody he liked. How do you account for this?
Not exactly. Remember, he wanted to put in a certain person, and before the prior U.S. attorney would resign, remember, he called out Bill Barr, and he said, I didn't resign.
Yeah.
Barr put out a statement on Friday night that he's being replaced. They tried to bribe him by offering him another position in the administration, and he wouldn't go for it. What he got before he did resign was a pledge that all the investigations, in essence, would continue without interference. And so this is why this is coming out at this point. And this one, of course, doesn't implicate the president, at least it doesn't directly. I kind of tongue-in-cheek sent out a tweet this week saying it really was Donald Trump's fault because of the fact that he failed to get Mexico to pay for the wall. So then these guys had to set up their own scheme. If he'd gotten Mexico to pay for the wall, there never would have been a scheme. Although I'm sure they would have come up with something else. And by the way, this fits right in with some of the ways like Brad Parscale was working, pulling a lot of money out of the Trump campaign coffers and things like that, self-dealing. Remember Trump, when he first decided to run, said, hey, and there's tapes of this. You see it on television. I'm a billionaire. I'm going to self-fund. I don't need anybody's money. And then he went out and started raising, got big donors like the Mercers and Adelson, Sheldon Adelson, and a lot of little people taking their hard-earned money while, they were paying their own organizations from the funds that other people were donating, where they put their headquarters and where they charge for things and meetings and et cetera.
Well, why not? He charges the American government for housing the Secret Service in his club, Mar-a-Lago, when he goes down to play golf. He owns it. So if he can do that, why can't he collect money from everybody to, you know, for his own personal benefit?
Yeah, I think last week I talked about Eric Swalwell saying that if we're successful in November getting rid of Trump, that there should be a commission on what the presidency has, his presidency has cost the American people in terms of funding. And by the way, this week, there was a decision that allowed the emoluments lawsuit to continue from the appeals court. It got overshadowed. If I'm not mistaken, I think I saw that.
Also, the court ruled that the tax returns had to be turned over to the New York DA. The Trump people appealed it. They lost the appeal.
Well, they lost the injunction. The appeal.
Well, that's right. The appeal on the injunction.
But that's a signal that they're going to lose.
Yeah.
Because if they were going to win, they would have certainly put the injunction on there. So the court cases are not doing so great.
So let me ask you this. So what you're saying is that the Biden strategy is basically the Hillary Clinton strategy minus Hillary Clinton. It didn't work for Hillary Clinton. Why will it work for Biden?
Because Biden's not a woman. Biden's not Hillary. Biden's more likable. And Hillary was only running against the specter of what a Trump presidency could be. Biden's running against the reality of what a Trump presidency really is. By the way, you notice one of the things Trump is running is he's continuing to fantasize about what will happen if you have a Biden presidency, that the stock market's going to crash, that the suburbs will become unlivable, that the cities will become riot zones continuously. You know, this dystopian view that a Democratic presidency will be the destruction of America.
Well, doesn't Trump need his own Willie Horton? I mean, what can he combat Biden on other than an accelerated racist campaign?
Well,
he's got nothing else.
Yeah. Well, he's got two Willie Hortons. I keep getting emails from people who say that Barack Obama is the real puppet master behind Joe Biden. And then he's got Kamala Harris. So he's got two people of color that they keep harping on for the racist appeals, the racist vote.
But Kamala Harris is not a paroled murderer. It's not the same thing. I mean,
no,
just the opposite. She's a paroled prosecutor.
Yeah, but she's still a woman of color.
Exactly. So really, what we need is more racism and in this case, standard anti-black racism. I don't think anti-immigrant racism will do the job for him at this point. In fact, I don't even see how racism does the job for him. He can't be much more racist than he's been. So it seems to me that you got to continue the racism and you really got to suppress the vote. Otherwise, I don't see how Trump wins.
Yeah, well, the Republicans are experts at suppressing the vote.
Ah, but in this case, we have to see how the Democrats are helping them. Because, and this came through at the convention, every other speaker in every other paragraph said, you got to vote early, right? That was the whole thing.
Right.
You got to vote early.
Right.
The question is the Biden campaign organized in such a way as to bring out their vote? I don't see that they are.
I'm not seeing a lot of it either. I think they're relying a lot on the individual states to do things.
Well, let's take a look at Pennsylvania, which we know pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't see it in Pennsylvania.
Well, we see some of it in Pennsylvania. We have the governor's office, and they're committed to helping out. And we have the Pennsylvania Secretary of State, Kathy Buchvar. And she has gotten the permission and that everybody is going to get a mail-in ballot, and the return is going to be postage prepaid. So to that extent, I
everybody think who's a registered voter is going to get a mail-in ballot?
That's what I'm understanding. Are they going to, or at least they're going to be able to get one. The problem is if it's not on the ballots being distributed, it's being it's going to be on the ballots being collected.
All right.
That's a problem.
Well, for that, and you need an organization.
There you need an organization. But again, that comes down to county by county. In Lackawanna County, and I've been to some meetings on this, right now you can send it in by mail or you can drop it off. But they only have one drop-off point in the whole county. And that is in the county building on Wyoming Avenue in Scranton. Now, in the primary, I went over to that building to drop off my ballot, and I went with my daughter, who was home at the time because of the virus. And it was on the first floor. We walked in the door. There was sheriff's deputies there. And we said, we're here to drop off our ballot. And he pointed right across from him. And there was it was like a mail chute type of thing. And we opened it up, put our ballots in, said thank you, and went away. Now, that's not going to be there. People have to go into the building, get through the security thing, and go up to the second floor. I think that's absolutely ridiculous. It should be on the first floor where there's sheriff's deputies watching this thing. And they should have it in other places. You know, states like Oregon and Utah, where it's completely mail-in ballot, they have alternate sites. There should be a site in Lackawanna County. You could talk about it being in the police stations. You could talk about being in the libraries, or the borough buildings. But there should be sites like.
Well, who decides? Who decides?
I think that's up to the. I've been trying to find out who decides. I think that's up to the County Board of Elections. And there was some hint in the newspaper this weekend that they're thinking of doing just that, expanding. And you've got to get something in the Down Valley. Of course, Lackawanna County isn't that geographically big. Luzerne County is huge. And there's always that problem, the split between Wilkes-Barre and the southern big city, which is Hazleton. Hazleton is a hotbed. It's Lou Barletta's home base. It's where Jim Bognat is right now running for Congress. But there's also a large Hispanic community down there. We'll have to see how Luzerne County works it, whether they just have one drop-off spot or whether they're going to do it by mail.
Well, what is the state of the campaign for Biden? What's the state of the organization of the campaign for Biden in Lackawanna County?
Not good. they're relying on the locals. Their main coordinator's out of Pittsburgh, I believe, on that. We have no Biden office here. Even the county office, the Republicans have a place, high visibility, on Lackawanna, I'm sorry, on Wyoming Avenue and Spruce Street in Scranton. The county Democrats are running out of a place in Peckville. That's on the main street. Peckville. Yeah. It makes no sense. I don't understand why they don't have any, they were running out of the IBW building, but that doesn't have street visibility. That was a back room. They just don't seem to feel it. They used to always have an office in Lackawanna County that had one across from the Scranton City Hall for years and years was theirs. And then there was another one that they had down on Wyoming Avenue, and they've abandoned that. They're just as...
I've read also that in Florida, there's no Biden organization that directs itself to the Hispanic community in a state where the Hispanic community is key. And yet there was an article written by an organizer down there saying that there was a letter signed by a whole bunch of organizers in Florida addressed to the campaign, to the Biden campaign, saying, please develop something in an organized fashion in Florida aimed at the Hispanic community or they won't vote. So if the convention strategy of the Biden campaign is to point out that you can't trust Trump to do any more than what he's doing, that what he did was horrible. Not that he's horrible, but what he's doing is horrible. And Trump's response to that is to suppress the vote. The Democratic response has to be to organize the vote, but that requires organizing, and there's no organizing. I don't see why anybody thinks Biden is going to win.
That's what we're going to find out. I mean, you talk about the Hispanic vote in Florida. Of course, in Florida, there are a lot of different Hispanic communities. Cuban vote.
Yeah, but that's true throughout the country. People speak of the Hispanic vote like it's monolithic. But, of course, Cubans are Republicans, Puerto Ricans are Democrats, Mexicans are Democrats, and so forth and so on.
Right.
We have 21 Latin American countries. They all have their own personal political profile.
Yeah. No, but in Florida, you have a lot of the Puerto Ricans that have left because of what happened in the hurricane and what have you.
And they should hate Trump for that. They should hate Trump.
Right. You want to definitely, tap into that. Texas, you've got the Mexicans, and I think Texas is a little better organized than other places. California's a safe area, and we see in Arizona things seem to be going okay because the Republicans in Arizona did the same thing the Republicans did under Pete Wilson in California and totally alienated the Hispanic community. So we're just going to have to see. The post office, we had that hearing early in the week. We're going to have another hearing on Monday from the House where they've dismantled the machinery to process these votes. A blatant attempt to slow down the mails.
They don't make any bones about it. They're telling us straight out, we're trying to suppress the vote. End of story. They're open about it.
Right? Because the polls show that the Republicans are more likely to go to the polls in person in November. Now, of course, that's taking a chance because we don't know if there's going to be a huge second wave in November or by November or the flu season or what have you. And people won't go out.
The Republicans but the Republicans are counting on their well-founded conclusion that their base doesn't believe this coronavirus exists. So why wouldn't they go out?
Well, that's it. I mean, that's the two realities that people are living in. Although you did see, remember the Tulsa rally?
Yes, that's true.
Show up.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
A lot of people didn't show up. In New Hampshire, they weren't going to show up.
They weren't going to show up.
Quite frankly, the rally down in Old Forge this week in Lackawanna County, I don't think had overwhelming numbers of people.
I'll tell you what was overwhelming. There was another 1.6 million unemployed this last week.
Yep. The numbers went up.
Yep.
The numbers went up.
Trump says, I know how to run the economy and I can get it restarted. But so far, it stays at an all-time horrible low under his watch.
Yeah.
He hasn't gotten it restarted yet. He has no plans for getting it restarted. What he has is a hope that somehow a miracle will occur, the virus will disappear, and capitalism will reassert itself. But as somebody said, there's no miracles.
Well, Mike Pence this week said there was going to be one.
A miracle?
So, yeah, he said, I think
all right, well, Pence says it, I believe it. Yeah. I'm waiting for the miracle. Anyway, next week we have the Republican primary. So this is unconventional number one. Next week we'll have unconventional number two, and we can pit one against the other and have other conclusions. So I'll see you next week.
It'll be showtime, and not in Charlotte and not in Jacksonville.
Right. But in your living room.
Live and in color.
Right. See you next week.
But mostly white for the Republicans.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye-bye. You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week. Same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps. members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.